The meeting of the Complaint Screening Committee of the Arizona Board of Psychologist Examiners to order. It is July 21st at 8:31 a.m. according to my computer's clock. Ms. Michelson, will you please call the roll?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Davis Wilson?
Present.
Mr. Dinar?
Present.
Dr. Malott?
Present.
Okay, we have quorum. We may proceed.
Thank you. So approval of the minutes, I make a motion to approve the June 15th regular session and executive session minutes. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
There's a motion and a second. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. None opposed, the motion carries. So let's move on to the case discussion. And before we get there, I want to make some important preliminary announcements. The Complaint Screening Committee, according to Arizona Revised Statute Section 32-2081H, may dismiss complaints appearing on this agenda or refer them to the full board for consideration and action. Complaints dismissed by the committee shall not be disclosed in response to a telephone inquiry or placed on the board's website, according to ARS Section 32-2081, subsection H1. On a vote of a majority of the quorum, the committee may go into executive session on any item on the agenda, according to ARS Section 38-431.03, subsection A2, to receive confidential records, or subsection A3, to receive confidential legal advice from the board's attorney, Ms. Jean Galvin. For those of you who are attending, please keep in mind that the chair, which is me, reserves the right to change the order of the items on the agenda based upon parties present. Since we have just one item on the agenda, I don't anticipate that from happening. When you're speaking, please keep in mind to use only initials for patients, children, and the complainant. Keep in mind that the content of many records involved in these complaints is confidential and the content should not be discussed in a public meeting. Keep in mind that the committee will go into executive session to discuss any confidential records. A person or representative of a person who has filed a complaint and is present at today's meeting, you may make a brief statement to the committee of up to 5 minutes when prompted by me. Additionally, the licensee or respondent who is the subject of the complaint will also have the chance to make a brief 5-minute statement only when prompted by me. The committee may also have questions for the complainant or respondent after their statement is made. Please note that only individuals directly involved in the complaint, which are the complainant, the respondent, may address the committee and make a statement. If the committee wishes to hear from any other party, it will make this request during the case review. For everyone in attendance today, please ensure that your audio remains on mute. When prompted by the committee to speak, the complainant, the respondent, and their legal representative may unmute themselves at that time. Please note that individuals in attendance who speak out without the committee's approval will be warned twice by me not to interrupt. If the interruption continues after the second warning, the individual will be removed from the Zoom meeting and not permitted to re-enter. So with those important preliminaries in mind, let's go to today's case number 22-30 for Neil Olshin. Dr. Davis Wilson, since you're the lead, would you please get us started?
Yes, I will. On April 29th, 2022, board staff received a complaint from BJ via his current wife against Dr. Olshin, alleging that Dr. Olshin provided services to his son without father's written consent or knowledge, failed to interview father as part of the evaluation process, made a recommendation regarding custody based on one-sided information from mother, and did not interview all relevant parties in the matter to include father. On the same day as the complaint, the court issued an order regarding BJ and his ex-wife, who have one son together, to modify legal decision-making, parenting time, and child support. It appears that mother submitted a motion to modify the terms after having received Dr. Olshin's report. With BJ's complaint, he did supply Dr. Olshin's report and various information from DCS to include a 2021 family functioning assessment, aftercare plan, and various notes from their investigation of child abuse. In October of 2021, mother initiated therapy services with Dr. Olshin. Son was 11 years old at the time. Son had 6 sessions with Dr. Olshin between October 2021 and April 2022, some of which the mother was present for. On February 24th, 2022, Dr. Olshan issued a 3-page report at the request of mother regarding son's psychological evaluation, in which he indicated that it was his professional opinion that based on 6 sessions with son, the custody arrangement needs to be modified and that the son should be living with mother at least 3/4 of the time and that father should have supervised visits or be in a structured environment. On June 6, 2022, board staff received Dr. Olshan's 2-page complaint response in a timely manner. The response is as follows. Dr. Olshan has concerns regarding the validity of the complaint as it was filed by the father's wife. He feels compelled to share that he has concerns regarding his safety, given the circumstances surrounding father's termination with the Phoenix Police Department. Makes Dr. Olshan even more uncomfortable knowing that father did not appeal any of the charges that were being placed against him. Does Dr. Olshan hope that the board will see the complaint for what it appears to be? An angry and vindictive individual lashing out after the government, after the court ruled that son could not live with mother during the week and could attend a school near mother's residence. Dr. Olshan believes that the clinical record will answer any questions that the board may have regarding his recommendation for his son. The complaint presents a very different picture regarding father's relationship with his son. Prior to meeting with son, mother presented Dr. Olshan an amended parenting plan, which specifically states it is ordered that all parties shall share joint legal decision-making with mother, having final authority on medical issues, including counseling. Throughout the course of treating son, Dr. Olshan has been assured by multiple parties that father had been informed of Dr. Olshan's counseling of son. The record demonstrates that Dr. Olshan indicated multiple times that he encouraged individuals to inform father that he'd be willing to talk to them, but Dr. Olshan never received any correspondence from father. Dr. Olshan represents that no psychological evaluation took place and that the report incorrectly stated this, and that does conclude the summary of my complaint, or of this complaint.
Thank you, Dr. Davis-Wilson. So now let's, I see that the complainant and Dr. Olshan are both present. Why don't we go to the complainant first. DJ, will you please unmute yourself and state your name for the record, just the initials, not the full name, obviously. And you may make a brief statement and the committee may have questions to ask you after your statement.
Okay. DJ? And I'm here for the complaint. I was never advised of Dr. Olshan. The first time I found out was when I got the paperwork. And in there, it doesn't show anything that for the first 10 years of our son's life, I had 80% custody of him. It wasn't until recently, until this all came up, that she came back in the picture and wanted more custody. I just feel that making a statement like that to the court, that I should be only have supervised parenting time, and majority of all the parenting I'm taken away from this counselor who had never interviewed me, never given me a chance to be interviewed. I have DCS complaints that are all from my ex-wife and the other counselor. None of them have been sustained. I just ethically and morally, I don't see how you talk to one side of my ex-wife and then come to that conclusion without ever talking to me, his grandparents, his aunt, his uncles, everybody that's raised him since he was born. And then all of a sudden I just get this report. And if he says that he reached out or anything like that, that's absolutely not true at all. I never had a chance to be interviewed or talk to the doctor or anything about this.
Thank you. Let's see if any committee members have any questions to ask. DJ. Hearing none.
Yeah, I do have a question, Mr. Dyna.
Yes, Dr. Moore. Yes.
My question to you, the complainant, is you said you've had custody for the last, you know, ever since the child was a baby. Is that correct?
Yes.
And during that time, is it 50-50?
It was 50-50 up until he started kindergarten, and at kindergarten she had 2 weekends a month, and then we would split summers in half.
Okay. And so the child went to the school in your neighborhood.
Yes. And he's always had straight A's and B's. It wasn't until recently when she wanted more custody that everything Well, that's another story. But as far as the counseling, I mean, I even have emails of me asking her who the counselor is, and the response from the other counselor also is, this is a safe place. He doesn't want you involved in the counseling. So I was never even, I'm sorry.
So were you aware of him receiving counseling from, were you approached for permission to provide, you know, because your custody arrangement states that you'll have joint decision-making in medical matters. Is that correct?
Correct. And she had given me a list of years ago of a few counselors, and I didn't agree to one of them because of other reasons that were in the writing that I didn't agree with. So we never came to a conclusion on one. And then she started just taking him to one. And I asked, who is this counselor that he's seeing? And I was never provided the information, not until after this last court date and everything got done, everything was finalized. Then once I made this complaint, I get an email from her saying, oh, here's his counselor.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Malott. Any further questions for DJ? Hearing none, let's now hear from Dr. Olshan. I see that you're on the Zoom call. Please state your name for the record, and you may make a brief statement, and then the committee members will have questions to ask you.
Okay. I'm Neil H. Olshan, PhD, and I think that my position is adequately summarized. Previously, I should bring to attention that recently, within I believe the past year, an order of protection was taken out on behalf of the juvenile regarding actions by his father, and the court ordered this. The meeting sites were at the Tempe Police Department, which is somewhat unusual for that. But one of the things I want to make very clear is the mother, I was treating him. I reached out to the father, never received a return call. I was told by the mother and by the juvenile that the father knew I was treating him, and was aware of my presence. I never received any communication from the father. Seeing him and not getting approval from the father, as I stated in my letter, when the mother was given full authority for medical and counseling decisions, I was told that I could contact the father, but legally I did not need the father's signature or okay to begin therapy, since that was granted by the court to the mother to have the sole decision regarding that, specifically counseling. I made the statement regarding my own safety, and that is reflected by my inclusion of an article which was brought to my attention by his son and the mother regarding activities of the father as a police officer. I also had been warned by an individual from that specific police department who I've done some work with, and so I wanted to put that caution out there because I am concerned. I made it very clear from the first time I saw the mother that I do not do custody evaluations. I have never done custody evaluations. My letter was simply directed to her upon her request for what were my opinions, but that was not a document that was to be submitted to the court. I made that very clear to her. I said, these are solely my opinions, and if the court wants custody, typically they will assign an attorney, or you will seek out an attorney that does custody decisions which I do not do. And that note to the report to the mother was specific, she was specifically told this was not a legal document to be given to the court. This was simply upon a request for her of what my opinion was. And therefore, and I will reiterate that I never received any query from the father. I would have been more than happy to speak with him. Also, I had access to numerous audio files which indicated and were the interaction between the son and father and other information which caused me to worry about the safety of the son. But that was only my opinion. It was not a custody evaluation. If it was presented to court as so, it was done without my permission. And that pretty well sums up. I've stopped any therapy with the son due to this action, and I feel very concerned that the son was making progress and that we had a very good connection, and that had to be terminated due to the current complaint. And that's my statement.
Thank you, Dr. Olshan. Now let's see if the committee members have any questions. So I have a few questions. Would you please respond, Dr. Olshan, to Dr. Malat's questioning in regards to getting informed consent? What steps did you take to obtain informed consent from the father, from the mother? Did you review any court records showing joint decision-making or sole decision-making authority? What was the basis of your decision to go along with what the mother told you regarding the custody and decision-making arrangement?
Well, I have the legal document, which I included in my records, which states pretty clearly that, and this document was active at the time that I initially saw her, and this is a quote. It is ordered that the parties shall share joint legal decision making with mother having final authority on medical issues, including counseling. And I, after making some efforts to contact the father and the calls were not returned, I sought legal advice, and I was told that that statement indicates that I made a good faith effort to, and the father did not respond at all during the total course of my treatment, and obviously I was curious as to why he never contacted me when I was told by multiple sources that he knew I was treating his son. Let me see, I think that's the answer to the one part of the question. If that had not been in the, and the mother signed the typical papers saying that she gave me permission to treat her juvenile. If that document had not been stated as such that she had the final authority on medical issues, including counseling, I would not have treated the juvenile until I had approval or consent by the father.
Thank you for your response, Dr. Olshan. Yes, it does answer my question. But my next question is, could you, for the record, state what steps you took to reach out to the father to inform him about the counseling that you were about to engage in and sort of like just some idea of the timeline and the measures that you took to reach out to the father.
The mother had assured me that she was going to contact the father. I'll get back to the calls. And on several occasions, the juvenile informed me that the father had made a comment regarding his seeing the psychologist. And I had placed two phone calls immediately after seeing the mother and the juvenile the first time. Neither call was returned. And at that time, I sought legal advice in terms of proceeding. I did not feel it was my role to keep trying to contact the father when I had multiple sources, and I had attempted twice immediately after the first session to contact the father and did not receive any contact back.
I had a follow-up question, Mr. Dinant, correct? Did you record that in your notes? I'm reading your note of 4/16/22, and I don't see any record of that.
It should be in there.
Was that the first date of your counseling, 4/16/22?
That was the last date.
That was the last date. Okay.
The therapy started in October.
Okay, sorry. I'll go backwards.
And just to add, Dr. Mott, to your question, Dr. Olshan did provide the clinical record with the response. I did double check everything, and I don't recall seeing any documentation to show his efforts that he's speaking to today about contacting the father. If Dr. Olshan wants to indicate where it is in the record, that would be helpful, but I don't remember seeing it.
Okay, thank you.
I'm looking right now. I don't see it here. I probably have it in my phone log, which I apologize is separate and had not included that. I'd be more than happy to provide that to the board. I thought I had included it. I apologize, but there were so many legal documents to include and send. I don't have it in there, but I'd be more than happy to provide a copy of my phone log to the board.
Thank you, Dr. Olshan. Yeah, I would like to see those phone logs or, you know, any record of your attempts to contact the father regarding this matter.
I can get that to you by this afternoon.
Okay, I appreciate that. I do have further questions. So could you speak about the circumstances of the letter that you wrote to the mother? And you stated today that you expressed your intent that the letter should not be used in any court proceeding. Could you speak to that and what were the circumstances in which the letter was solicited from you and what prompted you to write the letter?
What prompted me to write the letter were multiple requests from the mother to have a summary of what my opinion was. I reiterated to her, as I had initially on the first session, that I do not do child custody, I am not trained to do child custody, and that this report I'm giving to her is for her purview only as a report of my opinion. I told her that if she were to seek custody, most likely the court might appoint a psychologist who is trained and specializes in this, which would involve evaluating her, various relatives if needed, looking at all of the documents, evaluating the father. And I think her response was asking me how much this would cost. And I said that I didn't really have any idea, but it probably was rather costly. But I had reiterated to her a number of times, this is not a legal document. This is upon your request. I even told her that you can share it with your ex-husband. And all along the way, I informed her that I had not received any communication from him. And she assured me that he was aware of my presence and treating the juvenile.
So is any of this stated in the letter itself, or is any of this stated in your treatment notes?
One second here. Let me get my treatment notes. Apologies, I'm just trying to go through this.
So I can read from the note. Is that okay? On 1-10-22.
I'd appreciate it. I apologize. I'm not the best secretary, and I'm trying to go through all of this.
This is what you said, Dr. Ocean. Yeah, this is what you said. The mother asked if I would generate a report. I stated I could, but this would not be a report to determine if she could gain total custody. I told her this needs to be by a psychologist who are specialists in determining. I did tell her that I could make recommendations for increased custody and possibly recommending that the child stay with her during the week and attend school closer to her, and thereby able to use assistance with his studies. So,
you
did indicate that you would make a recommendation for increased custody. So,
but that was to her. It was not meant to be anything used in a courtroom situation. And that was only based upon my information that had been given to me. I think I was very clear that it was not to be used for any legal process.
I had a two-part question. You answered one part of it. The second part was, does this letter state this, that the letter is not intended for to be used in any testimonial capacity in a court?
I'm sorry, was that a question?
Yes, that is a question. Does the letter state that anything you state in that letter is not intended to be testimonial and for use in any court of record?
I do not believe so. This is stated to the mother.
All right. Thank you. Yeah, and we have the letter in front of us as well. So my next question is, you mentioned that you did not feel comfortable giving this opinion, and you made it clear to the mother that it was not to be used in court, and you also recommended to the mother that you know, she should probably discuss this with an attorney, maybe ask the court for an independent psychological evaluation from a person who does this kind of work. You say to the mother that you don't do this, these kinds of reports. Then what prompted you to write a letter in an area that you did not feel comfortable giving an opinion in?
Well, if you'll notice, the title of the report is not custody. It is a psychological evaluation. She wanted to know my opinion, and she was also paying for the therapy. And I told her that I would write my opinion as to what I felt, but that it was not to be used as a legal document. If I was doing the legal, I would have put custody evaluation. I put psychological evaluation. And at that time, either there was some question regarding the order of protection. And I also felt that that was also important to give this report to the mother and then tell her that if she wanted a city change, she needs to go through the court or go to a specialist. That's why this is titled psychological evaluation, not custody evaluation.
Thank you, Dr. Olshan. That's all the questions I have. Let's see if...
I have some more, Mr.
Yes, Dr. Malak, please.
Yeah. So, Dr. Olshan, I'm reading your final paragraph, and while you keep stating that you did not do a custody evaluation, were you still rendering a professional opinion? You are a licensed psychologist. Were you rendering a professional
opinion? Right.
Okay. Do you know the impact of rendering a professional opinion as a licensed psychologist?
Yes, I do.
Okay, so the minute you state that in writing that you are rendering a professional opinion as a licensed psychologist, do you see the impact of that statement? Regardless of whether you did a custody evaluation or not.
Yeah, I can see the impact of it, but that was my professional opinion at this time, but it was not be used for custody.
But do you believe that it was indeed used to modify the parenting plan?
I don't know. I have no idea. I have no idea.
It's a very powerful paragraph that you wrote, rendering a professional.
Well, I felt that before. I felt that the young man could be in danger. Everybody seems to be skipping the fact that there was an order of protection taken out. So obviously a court felt that there was sufficient reason that the juvenile could be in danger. You know, I mean, no, I didn't know after this was done. I don't know how she used it. All I know is how I told her about that, and I felt that I had an obligation as a psychologist to put a warning in there, as we are to do when we feel that a client might be in danger or the client may be a danger to someone else. I felt that I had to put that in there because I had received information from multiple sources, including the juvenile, of fear and, you know, the order of protection. That's not taken out for nothing.
Dr. Olshan, I have another question. Father. Yeah, I have another question. Did you put a caveat in there? I mean, it is obvious. I'm not saying it's not obvious reading your report that you did not interview the father. But did you put a caveat in there that your professional opinion you understand that you hadn't had a chance to interview the father, whatever the circumstances might be. And so it's based on reports from these sources. And so did you put some kind of a cautionary?
Well, I think I did in terms of I wanted to specifically list the sources of information I did, documents reviewed.
Okay.
Right at the beginning of my report, that my report is based upon my reviewing that information and information provided to me by the juvenile.
I had a couple of questions for DJ. Is that okay, Mr. Diana, to switch?
Yes, yeah, that's fine.
Ms. DJ, do you mind maybe just, you know, a couple of things that have come up reading through the notes, etc., was the distress that your son was in. And I'm just curious regarding the cell phone usage, calling the mother to get help with homework. Could you comment on that?
Yeah, I'd like to clarify, there's been one order of protection, and it was my order of protection against mom. That's the only order of protection. She tried to get one on me, and the judge listened to us both, and I got the order of protection on her. She did not get one on me. So I want to make sure that's clear, because for some reason he keeps saying there was an order of protection. She had filed
my question. Because
yeah, sorry. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry, I forgot your question.
My question was some of the distress that your son was experiencing regarding cell phone, calling the parents, getting help with homework. I'm trying to get some more clarity on that.
Yeah, and the cell phone issue was when we were going to go to court, we had submitted the paperwork and everything, but I don't have the paperwork in front of me, but it was over 10,000 text messages between him and his mom and his grandma and his sister nonstop all the time. And that was the proof that I was showing the court, saying that he has access to his phone 24/7. This was another thing that got hung up on, and to kind of distract from the real issues. But the fact it was brought a big concern about the cell phone deal, and the cell phone is, he always had a cell phone. I mean, there was over 10,000 messages back and forth showing that he freely used a cell phone whenever he wanted. There's been a lot of alienation, and I don't know if I'm allowed to address what the psychologist was just saying, but I mean, it's just, without being rude, they're lies. I never got it. Can I ask him, did he ever leave me a message on the phone? Because I own my own business. So I get phone calls, and unless you leave a message, I don't know who's calling. Was there ever a message left for me? Because I'll tell you, there was never a message.
Okay. Thank you, DJ.
Thank you.
Any additional questions for Dr. Olshan or DJ at this point?
Mr. Jenner, I do have yes. A couple of questions for Dr. Olshan. My first one is related to then the safety of the minor child. Dr. Olshan, if you did feel that the child was in danger, did you report this to anybody as we're generally required to do so?
I did not feel that he was in danger physically. And when DCS came out, they were given my name, I was told, but never called me for an interview. And I also have copies of the text messages back and forth between the juvenile and his mother. I also have audio recordings, and that was given by the mother with the father and the father's wife screaming at the juvenile. I really would rather not get into all of that, and the report of the other counselor who had stated it at certain counselor also. I had his report, a copy of his report to Oksana Holder, which I included in my records to the board, and that also has information in it. That's why, I heard interactions over the phone that were provided by the mother, but I did not feel that he was in danger physically. I was concerned about his emotional stability and his fear that he had related to me. And that's why I encouraged the mother to seek out a custody evaluation.
Thank you. So to clarify, the basis for the rendering of the professional opinion regarding the custody, what evaluations were done to render that opinion, or are you just using the information that was provided to you?
Okay, well, first of all, it was not meant to be a custody evaluation. It was a recommendation to the mother. The information that was provided to me was the article in the New York Times, in the New Times, regarding the father, information regarding a case being still open, the reports by the counselor who had seen the juvenile on numerous occasions, the audio files that I was presented, the copies of the text messages, the behavior of the juvenile whenever I discussed his interactions with his father. And those are the main components as to why I was recommending the mother take the next step if she wanted full custody, because that's what the juvenile stated to me, that he would rather be with his mother during the week and interact in school and have her available. And that's why I encouraged her to proceed with a custody evaluation. I had provided her a psychological evaluation. I may not have artfully stated that in the last paragraph, and that may be my fault, but that is not a custody evaluation. And
thank you.
If that was used by the court, then the court should have, the last I had heard from her was she expected the court to send her or to require a custody evaluation by a qualified person who does that.
Thank you. And to clarify, aside from the request by the minor child to want to be with mom, what can you describe what additional kind of symptoms that you were seeing or signs that you were seeing from the child that that he was in distress and it was due to his placement?
Every time I mentioned the father's name, he would become very withdrawn, very quiet. If I pressed him, he would cry. I had made him a tape, an audio file to help him sleep. And I was told that when I mentioned stress and such, that he couldn't listen to it. He appeared to be genuinely afraid of the interactions with the father and the father's wife. He consistently said he felt like an outsider in that family. He reported to me that his phone was taken away from him on a regular basis when he would be calling his mother or calling his mother for help with homework. And I have some of those transcripts from the text messages. But throughout the course of my treatment of the juvenile, he was absolutely consistent in terms of his desire to be living with his mother, at least during the week, his fear regarding his father, and his fear of the situation. You know, I can go back through the notes and be more specific.
No, that's... I think that answers it. It does. I still go back to then, if there was this consistent fear, you mentioned you were concerned about the order of protection. I'm still concerned whether physical, emotional. I mean, the statute around harm is not specific to just physical. As far as it is our obligation to report these things, and so I'm still wondering where the conclusion of choosing not to report the potential for harm came in, because it,
part of that was
doesn't align with what's being.
I'm sorry, didn't mean to interrupt.
That's okay.
Part of that was due to the fact that I was aware DCS evaluations were taking place, and that the mother had already reported this. And yes, there was distress, but I felt that it was going to be evaluated appropriately. And I was somewhat surprised that when DCS did their evaluations, they never contacted me.
Thank you. And you had mentioned earlier that you spoke to another representative from the Phoenix Police Department about the father. Can you explain to me a little bit of context about that conversation? You know, what was disclosed? Who did you speak to?
No, I can't do that, and that's for fear of my own safety. And the other individual said it, and I suggest that the board get a hold of the interactions from the Phoenix Police Department. Have you read the New Times article?
So Dr. Olshan, that's not my question. So you had mentioned that you spoke to somebody. I'm asking about the nature of, did you reach out to them? Did you disclose your relationship with the child's, with the father's child? I'm trying to figure out how another outside party unrelated to the treatment you were providing, what the nature of that conversation was. And again, it doesn't have, I don't need to know what the conversation was, but I'm curious as to how that information was derived. Was it solicited? How was that information derived? How did that individual become involved?
When a high-ranking officer came into my office and the New Times article was sitting on my desk, he glanced down at it and he said to me, "That's somebody you better watch your six." And I never made a comment, never said anything.
So this individual did not know any that you were providing any treatment or services to?
Absolutely, absolutely. I never said a comment. I had it sitting on my desk and it was a copy of the article. We were talking about something else, another matter. And he glanced down and he said, sort of offhandedly, he said, "That's the guy you got to watch your six with."
Okay. That is all of the questions that I have at this time.
I have one follow-up. The notes indicate that article was provided to Dr. Olshan from the son, from the minor child. Is that correct?
No, he mentioned it.
Okay, your notes indicate
he brought it up, and then I retrieve the article.
So would you consider that a confidential document, not that shouldn't have been even exposed to other individuals if it was in your
office? No, because it was published in the New Times magazine.
But you got it in context to a client.
Oh, you know, I have a lot of things on my desk that don't relate. I mean, that's sort of stretching it pretty far. Okay. Because I retrieved the article. The article, I don't know what the population of that magazine is, but it's a fairly large population. He didn't ask me any questions. He just looked down at it and went, oh, you know, okay. That's okay. The guy you got to watch your six with.
I have one more question. I have a question. Do you mind, Dr. Davis-Wilson, if I ask this question? You know, the DCS report, that wasn't referenced in your report at all. And that was public. I mean, that was completed on 12/8/21. Did you ever get to see that report?
Yes, I did.
And you did not reference that report in your report.
I believe I may have when I said mother and stepmother present, and they would not do that.
You may want to. You need to avoid using your son's name. At least
okay,
the
son's
name.
Okay.
Dad's name. Okay, because the report is very clear on certain counts. So anyway, just referencing. So you did have access to that report. I just needed to know that. So thank you.
I did. Yes. After.
I had another question, Dr. Olshan. As it pertains to the discontinuation of services, you say that the individual was making progress and that you had to discontinue services because of this complaint. Can you describe for me, one, what led to your decision to discontinue services, and two, what steps you had in place to ensure that the individual was able to access services by another provider?
I felt with this action that if I saw him, I'm perfectly willing to see him, but I told the mother that I can't see him until after some determination is made regarding the complaint. And I suggested to her that she seek out another therapist in the meantime, but that if the complaint was resolved and legalities, I guess, were resolved, I'm perfectly willing to come her since.
Thank you. And as a reminder, we cannot state the patient's name.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm a little tired. I haven't slept all night, and I slept well for about 3 days, so. Waiting for this, so I apologize.
Thank you. Those are all the questions I have at this time.
Thank you, Dr. Davis-Wilson. Any further questions? Hearing none, let's go into deliberations. As a reminder, this is a time for the committee members to discuss the case amongst themselves, so please do not interrupt either the complainant or the respondent. So Dr. Davis-Wilson, since you are the lead on this, would you please get us started?
Yes, thank you. So in review of this case, I do have several concerns. And I think I'm concerned with the complaint itself. There's no documentation supporting the attempts to get the informed consent from the father. The evaluation seems to include judgments that are objective and unrelated to any type of objective evaluation. Even if we were to say, well, it wasn't a custody evaluation, the impact of it had similar effects. I don't know.
Can I please interrupt and say that, Dr. Olshan, if you can mute, thank you. Yeah.
But the impacts of the, you know, psychological evaluation had similar effects as that of a custody evaluation. But I'm concerned that from my perspective, and I'm not a psychologist, so it's you know, coming from the representation of being more of a public member, that there didn't seem to be proper assessments or evaluations to even come to that conclusion, that conclusion was very much made based off of essentially a character judgment of the father and not necessarily facts. And I am concerned about that. Yes, there is a news article. Yes, father perhaps, you know, had some lapse in judgment or what have you in unrelated, completely different circumstances that I don't know, even can without other facts conclude, that those circumstances even could be assumed that has anything to do with this custody arrangement. I think that those circumstances are very, very far different from, even leading to that conclusion. Nor do I think it could, especially the news article in and of itself could have led to an assumption of danger for the child or that dad was a dangerous person. And I am further concerned that it is a news article, that's being used to reference these things when again, there's not further facts identified to support that either. I do think that we have a number of potential violations, and I would love to hear from my colleagues before I list some of the ones that I've pulled. But I do want to state that I would be in favor of moving this forward to the full board for an informal review, and at that time requesting that the phone logs. But I ultimately think this needs to move forward. But I would welcome some feedback from my colleagues.
I'd like to add, and I have a question for Ms. Michelson. Ms. Michelson, did you request the entire record from Dr. Olshan?
Yes, before he submitted his response, I made it clear that we needed the entire record, and he indicated that was submitted with his response.
So, but we did not receive like the phone logs and the audio recordings and things like that?
Correct. So I can follow up with Dr. Olshan before this goes to an initial review before the board for that information.
Okay, so we did not get the full record then, you know, so. Because all of that would have constituted the full record. Is that correct, Ms. Galvin? Mm-hmm. Would you consider that the full record?
I don't know if phone records. I don't know if the phone records are considered part of a clinical record, Ms. Galvin.
They would be considered part of the record, especially if he is claiming that there were attempts to contact father with respect to informed consent.
Okay. So, I think Dr. Davis Wilson summarized the main issues. To me, rendering a professional opinion is serious, regardless of whether you call it a custody evaluation or, you know, as a licensed psychologist, you know, that's why licensed psychologists are called upon by courts and things like that, because their opinions are valued and used in making future judgments, regardless of what you call. So one has to be extremely cautious, and it has serious implications. So I do believe this rights to a statutory violation. I should move to forward to the full board. So.
Thank you, Dr. Mullard and Dr. Davis Wilson. I am leaning in the same direction. I find it very concerning, the 3-page letter that the doctor wrote to the mother, while Dr. Olshan mentioned in his notes that the mother was informed that this letter was not to be used for any purposes other than for personal use. But there was nothing in the letter itself that makes it explicit for people who are reading the letter because it's one thing to state such a thing in your notes. No one's going to see that other than yourself, unless, you know, a complaint like this comes up. But it's the letter that's going to be seen by other people. And that's very concerning to me, that the doctor felt comfortable in giving professional advice, making professional recommendations, and not stating his intent in giving that sort of professional advice. And we see that that sort of omission from the letter has caused some harm here. I mean, we have the complaint, obviously, but there's harm to the child. There's harm to the relationship of the child with the father. There's harm to the relationship between the child and the mother, and the relationship between the mother and the father. And that's, we can't just disregard that as the board. So those are my concerns. I agree with Dr. Davis Wilson and Dr. Mullard that this should go to the full board at some point. I did note down a few possible violations of subsection 16 on professional conduct, but I want to hear first from my colleagues, because they are well better versed with this than I.
Dr. Davis Wilson, you had mentioned.
Yes, I have a small list. I would start with 32-206116, gross negligence, E, gross negligence in the practice of psychology. G, engaging in or offering to engage as a psychologist in activities not congruent with the psychologist's professional education, training, and experience. H, and this is pertaining to the informed consent, but failing or refusing to retain adequate business, financial, or professional records pertaining to the psychological services provided to a patient. O, providing services that are unnecessary or unsafe, or otherwise engaging in activities as a psychologist that are unprofessional by current standards of practice. I am concerned about V, abandoning or neglecting a client or patient in need of treatment. The basis that I have for that is, I'm concerned that I had hoped to hear something like, oh, through this process, I realized that maybe there wasn't informed consent or some other reason, but it appears that the abrupt stopping of services is just related to the complaint itself and not other reasons, nor was there any, attempt to make sure that the individual was not just left with nothing. And then DD, violating ethical standard adopted by the board, and that would include informed consent. And Dr. Mala, I think of the behavior analyst code on this one, but the basis for scientific and professional judgments stands out to me again, because there didn't appear to be any use of evaluations or any use of tools. Like, this was a very subjective, there was a news article and a lot of assumptions made about a character that can potentially be very damaging. So those are the ones that I identified.
And Dr. Davis Wilson, what section of the code was that? 3.10 is informed consent, but I wasn't sure what the other one was.
Oh, let me look again.
It is basis for assessment.
2.04, so basis for scientific and professional judgment.
Okay, thank you.
Was that a motion, Dr. Davis Wilson? Because I can
see. We're in agreement with those, I would move that those would be the potential violations, and that we move this forward to the full board for an informal hearing.
Dr. Davis Wilson, I was just wondering if there is a potential violation of subsection C as well. Making or using statements of a character tending to deceive or mislead, because it's the letter has, it's both what it states and what it does not state that's caused all this trouble.
I would agree with that. And I had originally wrote that, and then I had highlighted that one because I wasn't quite sure, but I do think both in the intent of the letter, but also in what's been articulated today, that there's a lot of assumptions that whether being intentional or not are misleading of a character that is quite damaging. So I would agree to.
But I feel like that particular one is covered by the gross negligence, you know? So I don't know whether it was a deliberate, that's the word that I kind of struggle with. I think it's more for gross negligence and not realizing the impact of rendering a professional. I want to give them the benefit of the doubt and not say gross negligence, and because we do have gross negligence. So.
Okay, I would be fine with it being captured there as well.
Mm-hmm. So for purposes of the motion, do we include everything that we consider could be potential, and then maybe the full board at some point decides which ones, all or some of them, might be violations?
That's correct. You could include it. Doesn't mean that that's an actual finding. The board may decide not to include that particular violation. But if you include it in part of your motion now, that goes to notice to the respondent at the time of the board meeting.
Okay, I'm fine.
Thank you. Yeah, then I would accept the friendly amendment as well.
I'll second it.
Right, there's a motion and a second. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. None opposed. The motion carries. Dr. Olshan, thank you for being here. DJ, thank you for being here. Our staff will provide additional information if you have any questions. So that is all the items on the agenda. Let's move to adjournment. I move to adjourn today's CSC meeting.
Okay. I'll second that.
Motion and second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. None opposed. Motion passes. We are adjourned. Thank you, everyone.